daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Welcome to another episode of the iTricks Week in Review, and this week is a very special one. Once again, we don't have Justin with us, but we do have the owner of iTricks.com and breakout television star, Andrew Main. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, Michael. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on this show.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. Like there was any avoiding it.
You had no choice.
That's right. So I guess we might as well just dive right into it. You have some kind of little, TV thing starting?
There's a thing I did that's going to be on something. You can check it out soon. Yes.
No, seriously. Don't trust Andrew Main. We are recording before it actually airs. It will be airing on
Monday
on A&E. Check your local listings, as they say.
10 p.m.
10 p.m.
9 Central.
See, I'm Central, so that's I always look for that. And we have our mountain people out there.
Yep. So that's at 10 p.m. So that's going to be Don't Trust Andrew Main on A&E. It's starting this Monday. Two episodes, double backed.
Right, and then after that, is that your regular time?
I believe so. Mondays at 10 p.m.
So after this week, your lead-in will be the return of their popular tattoo fix show, Bad Ink, won't it?
I'd have to check the schedule. That would be great, though. That's a great show.
Well, I checked the schedule, and that's what it told me.
Well, thank you. Somebody did their work.
That's right. Now, I think, obviously you've got a TV show. It's a big deal. It's a big deal when any performer gets their own television show. But a magician especially, and I think I've written about this on the site, I think 2014 is really poised to be a breakout year for magic. This is perfect timing on your part. But let me ask you, when Annie greenlighted, everything's going through that, I'm sure is very exciting. I mean, you've done some TV before. I know you had G4 Underground that you produced. But this time has to be different because this time you're literally putting your name in the show. You're out there. So when they come to you and they're like, we are so excited about this. We want you to do a special commercial and we want to introduce the show to our viewers during the season finale of Duck Dynasty, like the biggest show on cable television. Is that exciting or scary first?
Yes, it is exciting and scary. It's, I call it scary sighting. And, the thing that happens, Michael, is these things happen in stages. First it's, when I went to get into television, I was about 7 years ago, almost 8 years ago, you kind of have the idea that things happen very quickly and things happen slowly and they happen in these steps. And when you get used to the first one, then comes the next one. And so, this was the third pilot that I've shot. I did pilots for two other networks, and this was the third one that finally said, okay, we'll give this guy a series. And you go through a phase where first it's like, oh, well, I hope we can get a meeting with a network. And then you get your meeting with your network and you're like, oh, I hope it goes well. And then if you hope it goes well, and then you just hope to find out that they're interested and maybe they want to give you money to do a pilot. And then you wait to hear that out. And then you find out that they do. And then you wait for your start date and you wait for the negotiations. And you have all these little intermediate steps that you build up, this anxiety for and whatever. And it is very easy to forget at some point the holy cow moment, what just happened. I got a TV show. And I've seen it happen in other people, and I was kind of cognizant that might happen to me too, would be that there would be this, you go from the moment of like, well, let's pitch this, let's see what happens. And then it kind of is one day you see yourself, you're on set with, the guy who, I don't know if we can name the guy who actually shot our promos that aired during Duck Dynasty, but let me just put him, he's a celebrated cinematographer and a noted magician. And you find yourself on the set of a whole big, huge production after you've already shot your show, in the middle of everything, and it's this very surreal moment, because you start to think, how did I get here? How did I end up on the set? 60 people standing around me, somebody holding an umbrella, somebody getting you a Diet Coke and treating you in a way that you really don't deserve to be treated because it gets to be quite silly. But it's very easy to forget where you, all the steps along the way, and then you have to stop and go realize how stupidly lucky I was and just a number of things falling my way.
At any point, did you consider growing a beard and wearing camo to fit in better with the potential audience?
I can't grow a beard, man. I really can't. That was exciting. So what happens? The network came and said, hey, you know, would you want to do some promos to air during Duck Dynasty? And I'm like, yeah. So, you know, we came up with a couple bits that we could go do. And that was exciting that the network was excited enough about our show to let us just shoot two commercials that only were going to exist for the purpose of being on Duck Dynasty. That was kind of awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it really can't be understated how huge Duck Dynasty is to cable television. I mean, it mm-hmm. literally, I believe, I'm sure that in this, although I can't cite where I read it, but I believe it's bigger than like The Sopranos.
Oh yeah,
it's bigger. You know,
if it was a sitcom, it's probably the third most watched sitcom on television. And it's a phenomenon. It's incredible. And that was, you know, you do stuff and, you know, television loves magic. They love, you know, TV execs love magic. They don't always get it. And I've had friends have had opportunities to do stuff that I think if they had a little more support from the network end, if they had a little more opportunity for creative input, if they had a little more resources in there, they could have, you know, really had a much better chance at it. And so I'm used to the story and having had my own experiences of, you get an opportunity, but then it doesn't kind of go the way you want. And you, having the chance where things kind of go the way you want and get the support that you want doesn't happen very often. You know, it's not to get a TV series like this is going to be the first year, you know, there hasn't been, this will be the first year you're going to have multiple magicians with TV series, like actual series and not just specials or two-part episodes. So, you know, it's an exciting point. And, but, you know, to get to the point where you get the kind of support like that, where they're coming in and saying, yeah, we'll spend the money to shoot a full on, you know, promo spots to air during here on top of the other things they're doing. It's exciting. And, you know, to think that it's going to go on during, you know, one of the most watched shows of the year. It's just, you know, you have to step back and go, holy cow.
Now I have a tangential kind of question for you that you might not be qualified to answer, but you're qualified to have an opinion on. And, this podcast will probably come online Monday, Tuesday, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And this week's big kind of history article that we do on Monday is actually going to be about Night Court, because Night Court is celebrating its 30th anniversary this month.
Oh, wow.
And in sitting down and looking at that, Harry Anderson is the only magician I can think of who ever has starred in his own television series as an actor. You know, there have been other actor magicians. You know, Coe Norton, who was more an actor first and known as an actor and became a magician and known more as a magician as he went on. You know, and there was Channing Pollock had his acting and John Calvert and all that. But he's the only magician I can think of who had not just one show but two. Why don't you think more magicians end up kind of segueing into actors, because you have to be on some level an actor to be a successful magician?
Well, you know, actually, Michael, there's a lot of people who are, you know, pretty big in entertainment now who got their start in magic. Woody Allen, you know, Woody Allen did shows, performed, made money working as a magician, and then went on, got into comedy, came that way. Steve Martin, his roots lay in magic. You know, the putting together his magic show and what he was going to do led to his comedy, and then eventually became who he was.
Let me amend what I said, because I agree with all that. And Dick Cavett, and there's a whole bunch of people. Harry Anderson is the only person, I think, who you can say, here is a guy who was known as a kind of comic magician when somehow he fell into acting, you know, because it's real hard to find Steve Martin actually doing a straight magic performance. I mean, he worked at like Knott's Berry Farm back in the day.
Well, I mean, again, we can define it narrowly. And of course, it becomes, when you do that with anybody, then it's going to be hard to find an example. But, you know, you could see there was you know, back in the day on the Smothers Brothers, Steve Martin would do bits of his magic act and stuff. But yeah, he was, by that point, he was known as a comedian. And I think he was able to make that transition earlier on. But there are a lot of actors, people I've met who have some sort of background in that. And you start looking at people like, you know, you start rattling off names, Johnny Carson, Arsenio Hall, who got into magic and were pretty big at it. But as far as being a famous magician and then becoming an actor, sure, I think that there's just not that many famous magicians. I mean, that's the thing.
Granted.
You know, and so you already, when you say famous magicians that people would recognize, there's 10 people or less.
Very true. I think we forget that sometimes that magic has its magicians, mm-hmm. you know, and we're not the only field like that. I mean, music is very much like that. You know, if you talk to somebody and they're really into, say, Joe Satriani, they have taken guitar lessons at some point in their life.
Yeah.
That's how that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, in Harry Anderson's case is kind of interesting because, you know, here's a guy that I'm trying to remember the timeline, because when he started doing the Harry the Hat bits on Cheers and then he did his SNL appearances.
No, he did SNL first.
So was the SNL? Yeah, I'm trying to remember the timeline when that went.
Since I just wrote the article, I can rattle right off. He was on The Great American Laugh Off in the late 70s, which was a weekly syndicated kind of search for America's Next Great Stand-Up Comedian. Mm-hmm. And he was in that, and he did kind of well in that and did a few appearances there. Then he did a few Saturday Night Live appearances back when they were still doing stand-up acts mm-hmm. during Saturday Night Live, which almost nobody remembers. Joel Hodgson also did some then. And then he did The Escape Artist, the film, which wasn't super well received, but kind of that got him meeting some people. From there, he ended up on Cheers, and from Cheers, he ended up on Night Court, all without an audition, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, based up kind of the success of his character in the act and the Harry the Hat. So, but you look at that, and you mentioned Joel Hodgson. There's a guy who did SNL, did Letterman, did all the comedy festivals, and then then Secret Agent J, and then for a while, you know, was like kind of disappeared because he just kind of the comedy scene wasn't creative enough or enough of a venue for him. And then he pops up on Mystery Science Theater and makes history. You know, and it kind of gets, everybody has their own path. You know, there's not going to be one particular path, but when I can't think of, you know, how many other magicians can you name that were ever on SNL? You know, Harry, Joel, Penn and Teller.
Yeah, that would be about it. I mean, who would even fit? Maybe the Amazing Jonathan might fit.
And but they don't do variety anymore. All
right,
they do is music.
Right,
so.
Right. He would have had to be about 10 years younger.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's Harry Anderson's pathway. Part of it, I think, is based upon the strength of his character, the extreme likability. He plays that kind of the roguish type guy, boyish, likable. And the character of Judge Harry Stone, it was tailor-made to all those things that he brought on stage. He was already such a strong persona on stage. You know, I don't think it was that hard of work for them to make that together.
And they say it wasn't even written for him, which is the crazy thing.
Yeah, I think they certainly over time made it fit him.
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, it was on for 9 years, so, you know, you adapt. Yeah. We'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about you and a little less about Harry Anderson.
Oh, I love Harry Anderson. I'll talk about Harry Anderson all day long.
Hey, me too, and I can't believe you actually made a Secret Agent J reference. That is awesome, and anybody who doesn't know what that means, go look it up. As we record, it is almost Christmas, so most of our listeners are battling winter. Thoughts of mosquitoes are far from their minds, and even in the summer months, mosquitoes are basically just an annoyance. There are parts of the world, though, where mosquitoes are a deadly threat, because their bites can spread malaria. A $10 donation to don'tbiteme.ca can provide a family with a mosquito net that will protect them for up to 5 years. Not only will you be doing something magical for a family, you will receive a download of Great Magic by Jay Sankey, Bill Abbott, Joshua Jay, and others. 100% of the funds raised will go to mosquito nets. In this season of giving and love, give the gift of life to a family threatened by malaria. Visit don'tbiteme.ca today, and of course, do not include the apostrophe, don'tbiteme.ca.
iTricks.com.
And we're back with iTricks.com owner, magician, magic creator, author, and we're going to call him television star, Andrew Main.
Sure, television star. Show hasn't aired yet, Michael. They could still change their minds.
Well, you know, I don't think they're going to change their mind because, they've, like we've talked about, they've put an awful lot into promoting you. And in a way, it might just make you a bigger star if he did suddenly disappear.
Like, man, what did he do?
Best magic trick ever.
What happened on that iTricks podcast? What did he say?
But even though the show hasn't aired yet, I know I'm already reading people basically accusing you of every dirty television trick in the book. They're saying, oh, this is done with stooges and camera tricks and this and that. And the show hasn't even been on yet. And I'm pretty sure that 99, you know, that nobody's seen it.
Are spoken, Michael. I think that just sort of sums it up there. People who haven't even seen the show, you know, will say stuff like that. You know, having worked behind the scenes for so many magicians over the years and seeing that happen again and again, where people see something, some subset of magicians' reaction is when they're fooled and they don't know how it works, is they immediately say it's this or it's that. And that's going to happen. I mean, that's just sort of a natural part of the way some people will react to stuff. And, you know, okay. You know, no, it's not how I do it, but, you know, it doesn't matter. People are going to, you know, come to whatever conclusion they want.
Now, since we're kind of on the subject of the internet, we have the great exposure debate. And I know that's been going on for a long time. I mean, when you read old magazines, 20s, 30s, magicians are literally complaining about radio shows giving away the secrets of magic. Are you mindful? I mean, do you have to be mindful now about the internet? Are you afraid, or does it occur to you on any level that I'm going to do X and it's going to send, you know, so many people looking for how this was done? I mean, is that a measure of success now? You do an effect on TV and see if there's a spike on YouTube on explanations?
The problem is that there is, when we see these things or we observe these things, there is a reinforcement bias and there's a selection bias. 99.9% of people don't care how these things are done. If you're in a magic message board and there's a magic special that just came on that night, the next day it's going to be filled with magicians offering explanations for how things are done. Most people don't care. The only people who really care are going to be magicians. When it comes to how does somebody do that trick, you know, that's going to come down to just a very small percentage of the audience really cares and really wants to know how it works. And the overall effect, the joy of it or whatever may have already been lost on it. So what? You know, I don't really obsess or worry about that. I can't tell somebody else how to enjoy it or to enjoy something. And, you know, there are going to be people looking for explanations or in some cases just making up ones. Fine. You know, enjoy it however you like it or not at all.
Well, there you go. Enjoy it or not.
I know, it's magic. It's a TV show. You know, it's a thing. Is that it's funny because it's like you kind of, you know, having worked in I spent several years working in critical thinking education. You know, I was worked for the James Randi Foundation handling the $1 million prize, investigating claims of the paranormal, occult, and supernatural. And I would love to apply some of this critical reasoning that people are using in this area. I'd love for them to try applying it to other areas. And, you know, I think they'd find it very rewarding.
I think if you apply critical thinking to television, you will ruin the media.
You can still enjoy it. You can see, as long as you can know how a roller coaster works and still like it.
It'll ruin but the Love Boat. It'll ruin Fantasy.
But it's funny, like watching how news is made. You know, watch your average newscast. You know, and I'm not talking about any sort of political angle or whatever. But you watch a newscast and how it's made, and you look at all the tools and things like that employed to, from the way the cameras are cut, from the way, you know, was the reporter in the room with the person when they said this thing, or they not? Was that the question they asked for this stuff? And that sort of just deconstructs a lot of how we look at the world around us when you start to understand how those things work. So, you know, we could start applying to forms of pure entertainment. That's fine, but that would be the last place I'd apply it.
All right. Well, we got the show starting. Just brainstorm. Where are you hoping this leads you? I mean, is there a bigger mountain in today's era than a magician with his own television show?
I'm pretty happy with my own TV show, Michael. I don't know. What else? I love doing the show. The show is a lot of fun. You know, the show is about me using magic to have these interactions with people in ways where it's not a typical magic show. I don't know I don't know how a lot of magicians are going to react to it, because I don't go up to people telling them I'm a magician. It's not a hidden camera show, but it's, I'm a guy who goes up and interferes with people in their lives, you know, for, you know, fun. And then the bigger point is I'm using magic to help somebody, you know, somebody who's got a problem, somebody, the loved one, they want to get a point across, they need to get a message across. And that's what I'm doing, is I'm using magic to help them, you know, communicate. And that's the exciting part about it, is using magic in a dimension we really haven't seen it done before. And, you know, each episode there's somebody who's got a really, you know, sincere reason why they need some help. You know, whether it's, you know, a guy who absolutely loves his wife, but she watches TV too much and he wants to take the TV out of the relationship. You know, somebody who's, you know, keeps breaking promises to his wife and, you know, needs to have this pointed out to him. These things are very, these are real people, very real problems, and going in there and using magic in a way to help them out. And it's not real serious life-threatening problems. They're just sort of the things that kind of, I love you, but, the I love you, but kind of problems. And that's, you know, a fun way to take magic in a different direction. And that's what the heart of the show is really about, is just how can you use magic to have some sort of positive change?
Well, I have a real fear now of seeing you help some poor wife who's sick of her husband doing magic.
Ah, she doesn't know what kind of benefit she has. She doesn't know how lucky she is.
I don't know, man. You might need to talk to more magicians' wives.
Yeah. Well, there's everything in moderation, Michael.
Well, I'll tell you what, it has been great having you on today, and I thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, sir.
And once again, we're going to wrap it up here on the iTrix Week in Review. We will be back next week. And don't forget to tune in to A&E Monday at
10 p.m. 9 Central.
Eastern, 9 Central, that's right. And I'm sure since it's A&E, it might get replayed once or twice.
Probably. Probably.
All right, thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you.
All right, goodbye. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.